My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
Hey, listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the Duck Feed Show, where we talk about the Vince Gilligan-verse, a.k.a. Breaking Bad, El Camino, Better Call Saul, and future, the Huel Chronicles.
This is the beginning of season four. We're talking about Box Cutter, episode written by Vince Gilligan and directed by Adam Bernstein. Originally aired on July the 17th, 2011. I forgot how late this season started.
Me too. And we're at the pivot point. Like this is, you know, the show's been teetering towards this, but I think this is where the show straight up becomes a crime thriller.
Yeah.
Like primarily so, you know, and I think that like, previous it's always been this, you know, but there are a lot of other things it was doing and it's still going to do those things in the margins of this. But I think the balance where like 55% crime thriller, 45%, you know, general character study.
Yeah.
With this episode.
It's not a family drama really anymore, at least primarily, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's still stuff. It's all still fun. But yeah, and I think that's maybe part of, you know, when Better Call Saul came out.
Yes.
A little bit of the reaction to it both ways, like people who were a little bit put off by the early seasons and people who now are like, oh, it's a lot better than Breaking Bad. It's because it spends a lot of time in that area.
Yes.
It's a huge contrast. To where we're at now. This is intense.
No, we're in full-on game of cat and also cat between Walt and Gus.
Lucky cat versus smart cat. So this is picks up right after the cliffhanger, Dirty Pool, of course. Right after season three, and we say cliffhanger again. It wasn't a cliffhanger,
right?
Whether Gale was shot, cliffhanger, what was going to happen? Jesse has killed Gale. He's standing over him, and this has saved them from immediate danger. But you know, they've tweaked the nose of God.
Yes.
Like this is them spitting in the face of, you know, the eye of the Lord.
They're wedged further into a very dangerous place, basically.
Yes.
Tougher to get out, but can still be crushed, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're being held captive as Gus and company try to decide what to do with them. And Skyler's confused about this and spends the episode trying to figure out where Walt went because his car is still there.
Yeah, we get a little bit of check-in on the characters as is right for a season opener. You'll check in on Hank as well. This is the beginning of the mineral arc for Hank. You know, fan favorite, big meme thing. Everyone likes being Hank, an insufferable asshole who loves minerals.
Yeah. So we talked about it not really being a cliffhanger. I was going to say there's about a year's worth of forum posts that will disprove what you just said, Gary. It was never intended to be. Vince and the writers knew, okay, Jesse shot Gale, and that was what we were supposed to be left with. People expressed uncertainty and also expressed a lot of upset that Gale had died. People like Gale. Gale is a fun character. I don't know that Gale can exist in season four and five.
It'd be pretty funny, though. I would love to have him on the crew with the exterminators, like, just Robert's Rules of Order being brought up to the neo-Nazis. Like, I don't know, kind of be into it.
Yeah. But when Vince and the writers saw this reaction, they briefly considered, well, all right, we have that camera move maybe as an out, but they decided to stay the course. Right.
Yeah. It would be like a Chekhov's cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, or not Chekhov's, Schrodinger's.
Yes.
Cliffhanger. Like they might've decided in retrospect. It was never intended to be.
Yes.
So a third of this episode is one really long scene where it's very famous. Gus menaces Walt and Jesse and kills Victor. Sorry to the Victor heads out there.
Yeah.
Giancarlo Esposito terrified of that scene. It's intense. It's one big long scene. It's just with the heavies. You have to do something pretty intense.
And
also does like, this is also a big coming out of their shell moment for Gus. Like we had a lot of shit with Gus, of course, you know, Gus being a badass and everything, but I like how the show is showing Walt and Jesse exactly how serious this shit is at the same time it's showing the audience.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like until this point he's made threats and stuff, but this is as hands-on as it gets.
Yeah. This is Gus revealing the bit of Tuco in him, but whereas Tuco would have been screaming, while he did this, Gus does it silently.
Tuco would have done it in the restaurant as soon as he met Walt.
Yes.
It would have been a big to do, and you would end up in jail.
I love the scene. We'll talk about it at length when we get there.
Oh yeah, it's the centerpiece of the episode.
Yeah.
So much so, it's the thing I remembered about the episode.
Oh yeah, yeah. I forgot about
everything
all the
Skylar
else stuff.
That happens. Yeah, and all of it's just place setting.
Uh huh.
Right. Like this isn't like meaningful Skylar stuff.
Right.
Really. Or and it's just introducing Hank. We're gonna spend more time with him as we go. The check in on Saul isn't anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just checking in on everybody. I think we're really just meant to remember the box cutter scene.
Yeah. 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 As you alluded to at the beginning, this is our introduction to Huel Babineau, who is played very ably by Lavelle Crawford, stand-up comedian. Yep. Landslide.
Landslide. Landslide.
Huel's one of Saul's henchmen, acting as a bodyguard. A strange choice for Huel, I would say.
We get a little bit of background on Huel and Better Call Saul, but not as much as maybe we'd want.
No.
But there is a funny like parallel here between, SAT entrance exam of like Gus is to Mike as Saul is to Huel.
Uh-huh.
As a comparison between Gus and Saul.
Yeah. And it, one could say that Huel is an extended fat joke. I don't necessarily ascribe to that as a person of gravity, but also I like Huel's personality a lot.
Yeah, me too. like they're definitely doing something with his presence.
Yes.
His physicality. Mm-hmm. Right. Like it's not like a fat joke would read to me like he's constantly falling down.
Yeah.
And stuff, but he's just like a scary big dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like is the idea and not scary because he's fat or because he's black, but because he's supposed to be, because he's huge, his physicality is, he's immense.
It's the confusion that both of us got when we were younger, which is like, oh, you're heavy. You must be real strong.
Yeah. Exactly. It's why doesn't John Fetterman simply eat the other senators?
Right. Right.
But as a bodyguard.
Right.
And he's great. Vince Gilligan chose that name because he loves Huel Hauser. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Huel Hauser.
It's an avocado eating dog, Gary.
It is. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. And that's technically true. You got me there, Huel.
I couldn't disagree with you if I wanted to.
Yeah. Admit it, rhymes, Marge. Admit it. My two favorite scenes in this are the ending and the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
And the cold open of this is very good. It's a little bit of classic irony, because if someone's going to die in this, they have to seal their own doom.
Mm-hmm.
And here Gale is setting up the events that will ultimately lead to his death.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing that as he's setting up the super lab. This is between Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. And he is cutting open all of these boxes of big stainless steel equipment. And he's giddy about this. He literally calls it Christmas morning when Gus comes in. He's just delighted to see how big these vessels are.
Yeah, it's real life. It's a kid on site, Gale is very excited. Gus comes in to check, how he's doing. He says it's Christmas morning and Gus, is business about this. Mm-hmm. I want you to have what you need. Gale says, I doff my proverbial cap to you, sir. You won the internet. You dropped this.
Goonsire.
Pretty incredible.
Take all of my fives and my gold. Yeah.
Yes. And he said, Gus is business. How long do you think you can have things up and running? He goes, within the month. And then, Victor mad eyes him and says 2 weeks. And Gus doesn't correct him or anything.
Yeah.
There's a masquerade going on here.
Yeah. And kind of almost as a side, side mission here, Gale says, I ran this analysis on the blue meth that you pulled off of the street. If that is our competition, we really have our work cut out for us. And at first Gus doesn't appreciate the difference between 96% and 99%. It's only with Gale's insistence, primarily rooted in the fact that he wants to meet the person who cooked this, I think.
Well, and then also just professional, like, this is incredible. There's a part, they talk about that where he's like, Gus says, I can do 96. I worked hard for that figure. I'm proud of it. But that last 3% is huge.
It's a gulf.
And, you know, and Gus says, you know, there's that person's not going to work here. They're not professional. And Gale says, if that guy is not professional, what does that make me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is reasonable, mm-hmm. you know, as somebody who is a science nerd.
Yes.
Who's concerned with this shit. I mean, they are making poison for people to kill themselves, as mm-hmm. characters will later point out, you know, Gale says, you know, I know you'd want the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for this, and this is the best. It's the best I've ever seen. That last 3% is huge.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, one of the bits of evidence that ended up convincing Gale or convincing Gus, which ultimately leads to Gale having a hole right under his eye.
Yeah. As we're going to see here in the, you know, when we're back in right after the shot, or, you know, we see the shot and we've got Jesse looking down at Gale's body and he flees. Right. He's overwhelmed, but also he fired a gun in an apartment building. He's got to get out, but he doesn't go far. We're going to see.
No. Yeah. Somebody calls in the shot and we get another look around Gale's place. You know, we see the bullet went into the tea kettle. This is one of those beautiful, like Breaking Bad shots where they show you something surreal and then show you the cause.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like water leaking out of the stove and you're like, that's weird. And then you see it's the tea kettle. The phone is still buzzing and Victor rushes in and just lets himself go in.
Yeah.
You know, the person who called it in is like, you can't do that. We're waiting for the police. Stop tampering with evidence.
Mm-hmm.
He looks around and looks at the corpse. This is ultimately going to be a contributing factor in his death as well.
Yes. At least 50-50. Victor's just not responsive. And then he runs out and finds Jesse sitting in his car and then takes him at gunpoint and forces Jesse to drive to the lab. Like, you know, what the fuck did you do?
Yep. So Walt's still at the lab with Mike staring him down. I love Mike's exhaustion through this whole thing. Victor and Jesse arrive. You know, Jesse gets put in a chair and Victor kicks over this cart full of glassware.
Yeah.
Mike walks over and asks what happens and he tells him.
Yeah.
You know, and Mike is shook, you know, but the Mike being a professional, unlike mm-hmm. Victor, as we're going to find out the consequences for, is just like, were you seen?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, so what? And he's like, just another looky-loo. You know, this is going to be a thing that's going to be a problem.
Yes.
Among other things.
Big lapse of judgment on Victor's part.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's mad.
So Mike calls Gus and we time lapse to morning and cut over to the White residence where Maria showed up.
Real quick. Mm-hmm. What do you think Gus is doing during this time?
Oh, I mean,
because they make a point of making it take a while before he comes in and renders judgment.
I think that Fryer's not clean yet.
Oh, you think he's just working with Lloyd?
Yeah, he's just torturing Lloyd.
Lyle. Yeah. I always assume that he is strategizing mm-hmm. during this period, which I know is silly. Like, I'm just imagining him like Sephiroth, like sitting in a room, like a fucking dark internet, dark intellectual web, like sitting in a room full of skulls, considering
interlacing his fingers like that guy from Evangelion. Like,
exactly. But I just. In other times when this kind of thing happens, they show he's out doing his face.
Yes.
You know, he's out doing, and I don't think he's doing that here. I think this is, you know, a pretty serious fucking blow. And he has to actually, you know, we keep seeing people in the show come up with things absolutely on the spot that are very strategic
mm-hmm.
and chess-like, which is not really how that works.
No.
You know, like this is him saying if, you know, doing a bunch of if-thens. In his office, I think.
It also serves
for the better part of the night.
It serves a dramatic purpose as well, I think, because I think it's pretty important that we not see Gus until he shows up at the lab.
Oh,
for the
absolutely.
Last third of the episode. Like, it really contributes to it being, oh God, Dad's home. Right.
Yeah. And also just him waiting them wait for additional menace.
Yeah.
Like, even though he says, you know, fear is not an effective motivator,
mm-hmm.
He's tried the fucking carrot.
Yeah.
You know, so the next day, Marie shows up at the White House, and hands over another bill, you know, for physical therapy. You know, I'm sorry. These seem to be getting bigger instead of smaller.
Yeah.
She woke Skylar up.
Right. There. Skylar assures her like, hey, no, don't worry. We can handle it. And Marie, you know, she's doing everything as of going hubba hubba. Oh, mm-hmm. you know, there's like, oh, you know, Walt's car is still here. Like, does this mean what I think it means? And Skylar mm-hmm. doesn't know what she's talking about. Walt just excused himself from dinner last night.
Yep. And just, got forced to put in the car mm-hmm. or get in the car. Marie leaves. And Skylar checks on Junior. Junior's listening to music and then goes out to check the car, grabs a spare key from above the wheel well and moves the car.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. on the street, comes back and gives Junior his favorite meal.
Classic Junior.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
Back at the lab, Walt tells Mike, you know, trying to get himself a little bit of leverage here, you know, like, okay, Gus is going to want us to cook, right? Like if we don't start, we're not going to hit the quota. Well, then where are we?
And this
are,
is him being really smart.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Because this is tactical.
Mm-hmm.
If he's just doing the work, mm-hmm. like he's demonstrating value, it like it's an inertial thing.
Yes.
It'd make less sense for Gus to come just and just murk him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, like, let me do the thing I do.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be so easier for you to accept this as a new status quo if it's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, like he's just cooking.
Yeah.
This is all normal. You know, how do I play the part to norm? You know, this is kind of a little bit of like what he does with his family. How do I play the part that is expected of me to make everybody see that's what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
and then just reacclimate after a huge, you know, disruption?
Yeah. Quick check in here. Jesse's just been sitting next to Walt, staring at nothing. Yeah.
We're going to get, you know, we're mineral Hank this. And then we get the, apathetic Jesse
mm-hmm.
during this, which is not my favorite Jesse.
Right.
Arc. Like when he comes out of it, I think it's fun,
mm-hmm.
but Jesse does not get, much to do.
Yeah.
For the first half of the season, if I recall.
And he pretty much just terrifies Badger and Skinny Pete.
So he's saying we have to cook. Victor's not gonna let him, and Mike's not looking, and Victor gets up and starts to cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he, you know, turns to him, he's furious. You know, mm-hmm. That's right, genius, watch me, we ain't missing no cook.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely, he fucking hates that Walt put him in this position. Mm-hmm. But he sees opportunity.
Yes. It's like, okay, no, yeah. I can take this role. Maybe that money can be mine, or mm-hmm. at least some of it. And also, like, he's probably panicking too because he knows he got seen. Yeah. So, like, whoever is cooking is indispensable. So he thinks,
In addition to, you know, panicking for that, also just like to a degree, you know, Gus is probably a fairly unpredictable boss.
Yeah.
You know, like wanting, you know, also being sold by the, no, we should have the cook
mm-hmm.
go in. Like, I need to try to lessen this.
Yes.
So, lots of reasons here.
Yeah.
We get another little check-in here, this time on Saul
mm-hmm.
Here. A guy is pounding on the door to get in. Huell sends him away, you know, their clothes. We do a little close-up on the breathing. His nose breathing,
mm-hmm.
his loud breathing.
Yeah.
You know, Francesca's behind the glass and Skylar calls.
Yeah.
And she tries to forward it to Saul. Saul is in his office looking for bugs at this point.
he's almost in full on bug out mode. He's not taken out the business card yet, but you know, it's pretty rough. And you know, he's taken the foam columns away from the wall and looking and stuff. And Saul waits and then returns Skylar's call from a payphone, obviously taking mm-hmm. Huell out there with him. And saying like, oh, I'm sure Walt's fine. I don't know where he is. I haven't seen him, but he's probably fine.
There's a great little bit in here where Skylar's like, oh, like, I can't remember exactly what she says. Like, oh, he just got lost on his way home from the meth lab.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, oh, you're breaking up there. I didn't catch that last bit. You're a chatty Cathy. you know, and as he's saying, you know, saying he's fine, Skylar hangs up on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's, you know, still holding the receiver with a rag and then looks to Huell and says, you got a passport, right? and he nods like they might have to bug out. He is the only person who's appropriately scared of Gus's reaction, really.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Cause he knows, you know,
yeah.
at least somewhat. So Skylar calls a locksmith. She goes over to Walt's place. He's not there, and calls a locksmith, to come out and open it up. But the problem is she doesn't have proof of ownership, and she is doing her own little Walter White, like spinning out the lie. As long as I am talking and this person is still here, I'm winning kind of deal.
A chance, yeah.
Yeah. And she, and she uses Holly and the story about a purse snatcher to convince him to open it. And she is pulling every lever she can. She starts faking a panic
attack.
She's
upping the stocks. Yeah. Like, oh, there's my medication was in that bag.
Uh-huh.
You know, here, you hold the baby.
Yeah.
You know, please take her, you know, like
she's crying. Yeah.
Yeah. Extremely manipulative,
mm-hmm.
You know, behavior here to get him to open the lock. He does. And he doesn't want to take payment or even acknowledge that he did it, you know,
yeah.
Cause it's getting in trouble. She immediately turns it off. turns off the masquerade and then starts searching the place.
Yeah.
Finds the teddy bear eye, but does not find anything else useful.
Cut over to the Hank's household there. Marie returns home, and kind of sits in the car looking at the front door with a bit of dread. Hank is in the bedroom, kind of got a goon layer going on a little bit. And he's got about 3 days growth on his face, and he is engaging in his new hobby here. He is bidding on minerals, and he is surrounded by rocks. Behold, the mighty geode.
Yes, my geode will be acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
When I said this is a really minor point, like Hank, you know, contrasting Hank with Jesse, Jesse's shell shock arc in the beginning of this, I'm a little bit bored by, if I'm being honest. I really like the Hank Murray stuff that comes from this. It's both of them are having a story of coming back from this. Like Hank wakes up when he starts having leads again and starts believing in Heisenberg again. Jesse wakes up when Gus starts manipulating him and being, you know, feeling useful. Mm-hmm. But they both kind of come out of their shells. All of this, the reason why the Hank Marie stuff works for me a lot better is because of Marie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point of view character who I give a shit about.
Yes.
You know, during this. And it's heartbreaking to watch her try.
Oh, it's terrible.
So hard. Yeah. You know, it's absolutely, you know, difficult. It's like, oh, you know, your physical therapist today said that you made a breakthrough. And he's like, yeah, I walked 16 feet in, you know, 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I only had 10% less shit in my leg. So if you and if you and the whole rest of the world got together and redefined the world or the word breakthrough, then yeah, I guess you could say I did it.
Yeah.
You know, really fucking mean stuff.
Yeah.
He said, you know, she changes subject. Oh, this is a great little rock. Jesus Christ, Marie, they're minerals. Mm-hmm. It's pretty. I think it's great. Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's like, I need the thing. You know, he doesn't want to talk about it because this whole thing is a huge indignity.
Yeah.
This is a real thing. If this happens to people, people really struggle with this stuff. I know I would.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is really difficult where she has to get him up onto the bedpan and they make us watch every bit of the logistics, you know, like how to get him up, how he has to pull himself up. It looks painful. It takes a long time. Like we're feeling the indignity of this.
Yes. Yeah. And she starts, you know, she's standing there as he is, you know, on top of the bedpan and starts trying to talk about the rocks some more, but then decides to leave. Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to give you at least the dignity of privacy for this.
Yeah. Tough stuff. You know, Victor keeps pouring things, you know, as he's going through doing the meth steps, and Walt is getting really bothered by this. This is very funny. I'm glad there's a tiny little bit of like comedy in this episode.
Yes.
Of Walt being bought, you know, having just had a guy be murdered and everything.
Like, yeah.
My man can compartmentalize. like, you know, all right. I just want to go on record. We should all be wearing masks, you know, like, everyone groans at his shit.
Yeah. No, nobody wants to hear it. You know, Victor has a mask on, right?
Yeah.
Just everybody. Like you didn't think the chemicals only apply to you because you're cooking. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. Mike doesn't respond, goes and gets some coffee.
He never puts his gun down.
Yeah. No longer trusting.
Yeah.
And then Walt starts commenting to Jesse, and Jesse is still just murdered a man. Like there's tons of dark comedy in this. Like this is very funny to me being like, oh, Jesse can at least have a professional interest in this. Let's make fun of the new guy.
Get a load of this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Guarantee he forgets the aluminum. And then Victor stops and thinks for a moment and remembers the aluminum. The comic timing in this is very good.
Yeah.
It's a very tense scene, but this is very funny.
It's just Walt's like, he's just looking for anything. And then the door opens and we enter an incredibly agonizing sequence here.
Yeah. Yeah. This is great.
Gus, you know, opens up the door and then just looms over them from the walkway. And we enter into, I counted it, from Gus's entry here to the throat slitting, slitting to when he says a word, he shows up a whole 10 minutes before he even speaks. All of this is wordless.
Yeah, it's really good too. Like, you know, I know I have the reputation for being captain bored by lack of incident, but this is really great tension building.
Yes.
I have absolutely pins and needles, you know, not pins and needles when you're numb. On needles?
What is the one that's tense? On tenter hooks? Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Something like that.
Yeah.
you know, he looks down at Victor blankly. Victor looks up at him and smirks and nods like, I got you.
Look who's cooking now. You know,
I got you, fam. Like, and he walks down the stairs, stares at Walt, and then goes to the locker and disrobes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, takes off his jacket, takes off his tie, takes off his shirt, takes off his shoes, puts on a clean suit.
Yeah.
Here, hangs everything up immaculately. Yes. You know, this is one of the time, this is one of the most Quentin Tarantino-esque scenes in this.
A little bit,
that kind
yeah.
of ritual is like a real like hitman he mm-hmm. invented kind of thing. When I talk about this switching over to a crime thriller,
mm-hmm.
this kind of touch of just like, they call him Mr. Clean. He never gets his suit dirty, you know, or something like that, can feel a little pulpier
or a little
bit more like heightened reality than mm-hmm. the show always does.
Yeah.
You know,
It's been dialogueless up to this point, and then Walt starts. I love the way Bryan Cranston describes this. He is tap dancing to stay alive.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and he's like, oh, let's talk about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, Gale was a good man. He didn't deserve that. You know, he's doing these fucking techniques,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I do it again. You know, this is on you for making us make a choice. If you make it, you know, between Gale or me or Jesse, it's always going to be me or Jesse every time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Gus isn't responding. Gus is immune to Walt's weapon.
Yes.
You know, this is what Walt does. And Gus is like, no, this is no longer going to work on me.
Yeah.
There's a great scene in a couple episodes where Walt tries to get Mike to set up a meeting with Gus.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike says, you're never going to see him again.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, basically, like, this is that door is closed.
Yeah.
We know your tricks.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And Gus doesn't give an inch, right?
Yep.
No response. I don't think he even looks at him after this.
Yeah. It's great.
You know, and, you know, Walt's saying, like, okay, well, that's a little bit later. Sorry. I thought I forgot to make a note of it. Victor starts talking this time, joining the tap dancing to stay alive kind of thing, saying, hey, I know every single step of the cook. And Walt tries to stand up to protest this, but Mike puts him back down.
Yeah,
just like Mike can't know what Gus actually wants right now, but he knows that Gus doesn't want Walt standing up.
Yeah. One of my favorite things in this is seeing Mike get surprised.
Yes,
at that what happened to the scene as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Walt starts, you know, spewing these things like, oh, how would you know if the precursor was rotten?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, oh, I forgot. Is it anaerobic or chiral? You know, things like that. Nonsense. I mean, that's actually sense, but I don't care about it.
Right.
You know, Victor, and he's being sarcastic, like, come on, help me out, professor.
Mm-hmm.
And Victor says, it's just a recipe. That's why they call it a cook.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just follow the steps. I've been watching it for months.
And Victor's wrong, because Walt raises a point, like, what happens when the humidity changes, right?
Yeah.
There's a basis to all this, and not everything is static. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll appear static to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a man who has only seen Boss Baby, but I assure you, this is not Boss Baby.
Uh-huh.
You know, Gus starts rifling through the drawers and pulls out a box cutter, the same box cutter Gale used to open up the boxes.
Yes.
Which the wiki helpfully tells us is an example of Chekhov's gun.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you didn't know that, them showing a box cutter in the first act for anything means that will be used.
Yes.
At some point. It ensure if somebody opens a box or something,
mm-hmm.
you need to know in the third act that somebody's throat is going to get slit.
You might think that that is only the case when the episode is named Box Cutter to raise the stakes so people will kind of stay along for this this kind of avant-garde composition of a scene.
Yeah, literary device, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I also like that the wiki helpfully identifies the precise make and model of the
It's real wiki. Like, both those things, the absolutely broad application of the literary device, but then mm-hmm. focusing in on the make and model, the box cutter is very funny to me.
They're zooming wildly here.
It's fucking maidenless. like, absolute maidenless behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Walt, you know, plays his, you know, starts playing his trump cards. Like, basically, Gus, you know, if you do this, all you have is an $8 million hole in the ground.
Yeah.
Going to business. Gus stands over him with the box cutter and he gets desperate. His voice is cracking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kill me, you have nothing. You kill Jesse, you don't have me.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse looks over, you know, momentarily touched by this. You know, I'm still team Walt does care about Jesse after a fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then Gus sidles over to Victor over this point and looks furious. And Walt starts again. He's almost crying. Like, just let us cook.
Mm-hmm.
Just let me cook.
Yeah. And then Gus does it. previously yep. he has been, you know, very diplomatic, been kind of a business bureaucratic mover and shaker kind of person, making things happen by influencing people. Here he's getting his hands and everything about him directly dirty by grabbing onto Victor and then very quickly just opening up his throat with the box cutter.
Yep. And then holding him, like Victor mm-hmm. is going to try to put his hands up to his throat. It's going to try to get his hand. And Gus keeps slapping his hands away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you are here to bleed out.
Yes.
The amount of blood and it getting on these people is important to what's mm-hmm. happening here.
And it's important that they see it. It's important that that this not be covered as you are yep. gasping for breath through your opened yep. up trachea. Yeah. This was apparently a very uncomfortable prosthetic. And it took 2 days to shoot.
yeah. Not yeah. not too surprising. Like yeah. it looks good.
Oh, really?
Like it yeah. looks real.
It's hard to look at. Yeah.
Yeah. No, very, very hard. And Victor Head's fucking mm-hmm. Vigil.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
This was so bloody.
At least we still have Tyrus. God.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? Oh, the hearts of the show.
the scene was so bloody that Bryan Cranston's daughter fainted during the screening of the episode.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's great. And I love this little bit of reaction. Mike is surprised. Mm-hmm. Walt looks dumbstruck. Jesse is glaring with anger at Gus.
Yes.
Jesse immediately understands it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get payoff for that later, but I love that about Jesse. Like, the kind of, you know, the intellectual side of this, obviously Walt gets. The weird emotional side of it, though, mm-hmm. like the intuition, yeah. emotional truth part of this, Jesse's really good at.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, I know exactly what that means.
Oh, yeah. No, loud and clear, you know? Bud. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Got you. You know, Gus, you know, he flops Victor down on the floor by Walt. Walt is absolutely terrified. Gus drops the box cutter as the pool of blood starts getting to Walt's feet.
Yeah.
Getting on his shoes.
And then Gus, still wordless, slowly walks over to the eyewash station, cleans off his face, you know, cleans off mm-hmm. his glasses and hair and stuff, and then methodically gets changed back into his clothes. When he was getting changed the first time, this didn't really show up, but here you get a really good, really good look. Gus is jacked. I think it's important that we see him without the jacket on, without the jacket and shirt, just kind of like, oh yes, you know, he does appear to be this nebbish, right?
Yeah. But
no, like he did, he's fully cloak off here, right?
Yeah. It's interesting that I think that maybe Giancarlo Esposito is just strong.
That's true.
Know, cause he doesn't do anything with this after this, really.
Yeah.
You know, it is showing that he's there. I think the other important part of this to me is how easily he's switching modes.
Mm-hmm.
Like him going down and taking, you know, putting on their protective gear, doing the worst thing they've seen done to mm-hmm. somebody this close, and then just taking it off and immediately transforming is showing the ease of that.
Yes.
Like, I can become Tuco. Like, I can become the scariest, worst thing to you with no effort.
Yeah.
And then switch back. Like, you do not know shit, motherfucker. Like, welcome to hell. You don't even know my name, you know? and he walks back upstairs and he gets this one line. He looks down and goes, well, get back to work, you know? Really great.
Yeah.
Great, great little bit. And because it's Breaking Bad, we can't be let go there.
No.
We have to always see the cleanup when somebody dies.
And we get to see what will become a ritual for them. Mm-hmm. You know, once you dissolve one person in acid, it is just so easy to keep doing it again.
It actually becomes more fun. It's like a Pringle. Like, it's not like you can stop at that point. Like, dissolving people in acid is Pringles now.
It's Pringles to me. It's after a commercial break and we see Victor's blood kind of rushing toward this floor drain. You know, Walt and Jesse are, you know, cleaning up and they start loading Victor into this plastic barrel. And Mike looks on, just absolutely disgusted by this, the plan, you know, and Walt gives like a so what gesture. And then Mike comes over and helps them tip the barrel upright so they can start pouring in the acid.
I read that differently. I didn't read Mike looking on disgusted at the procedure. I feel like Mike would, you know, this is a good procedure for this. And it would be like, we have to get rid of the body.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be other logistics involved in getting rid of this.
Uh-huh.
I took this as Mike just disgusted about the mess.
Yeah.
And Walt giving him a look of like, why aren't you helping?
Yeah.
And Mike eventually helps because they won't be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Mike has to clean up all this shit. And this is the beginning of, you know, you asshole, we had a good thing going.
Yes.
Like, this is all of Mike's security. We're going to see the reason why he needs that security later in the next couple seasons, but then also a lot in Better Call Saul.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they start pouring, and Mike asks, like, "Hey, is this going to do the job?"
They never used this stuff before.
Yeah. And Jesse's like, "Yeah, it'll do it.
Trust us." Yeah. They throw the gun, they throw the box cutter, they start pouring, in there. And then Walt cleans the barrel, marks it as corrosive, and it gets loaded up in a truck to be hauled away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for Victor. He's just in a barrel now.
Yeah.
Never to be found.
He's soup.
As Walt's mopping up blood. We match cut this blood to dipping a fry in Denny's. This is very similar to the scene after the corpse cleanup in Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why the Tarantino stuff was hitting me.
Yeah. Yeah.
This episode with them wearing, shirts. They're wearing a Kenny Rogers t-shirt, both of them the same shirt, because they needed new clothes. Their clothes were all bloody. And Mike just went to fucking Target.
Yeah.
And bought the first two t-shirts that would fit them.
Oh, this is a gas station shirt, Gary.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Truck stop. Yeah. Yeah. Like, just went to a store and got the very first thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's these guys. I also love the detail later that had to get new pants. Mike bought Walter these white, white khakis, bright white, mm-hmm. that are like three sizes too big. So he has to walk hitching them up.
Yep. It's really good.
Jesse's out of his trance. In fact, he's worked up a hunger. He's got a grand slam showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walt isn't eating,
mm-hmm.
And Walt is still in the game.
Yeah.
Walt, how are you doing, Jesse? Jesse goes, really, how are you doing? You shouldn't have had to do what you had to do. It was him or us, though, all these things, and Jesse doesn't really react.
Jesse's passed.
He doesn't need to be absolved for this. And he goes, thoughts, and on what? Any thoughts on what our next move should be?
Mm-hmm.
This man is going to kill us the next time he gets an opportunity. And Jesse, who again can read the emotional part of this,
mm-hmm.
the intuitive part of it, says, well, that seemed like a pretty good opportunity to me. Walt's like, oh, it's only a matter of time until he finds another chemist. And Jesse's like, no, it's mm-hmm. not. He's not going to find another chemist. He's got to find one with knowledge and one he can trust.
Yes.
I bet it took years for him to find Gail.
Mm-hmm.
I bet he's sorry now. Like, that's not going to happen. And Walt's kind of stymied by this. Let's do strategy. We're not actually playing a game anymore.
Yeah.
And Jesse drops the understanding here. At least now we all understand each other.
Yeah.
And him and us. Like, what? Yeah. Him and us. Mime's slitting his throat. We're still on the same page, in between mouthfuls of fries.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt's like, what page is that? The one that says, if I can't kill you, you'll sure as shit wish I did.
Yeah.
I own you entirely now.
Mm-hmm.
You have no power over this.
No.
No.
Yeah. You're less than nothing. This is not going to be a life that you have. And Jesse, having said that incredibly dark thing, just laughs and calls for a refill on his water.
It was Mountain Dew. And the only reason why I noticed that is because I was thinking about how it's been 15 years since I've had Mountain Dew. And it kind of made me want Mountain Dew.
You know what? I was at a gas station the other day, and I was taking a bit of a drive, and I saw the fountains, and I saw they had Diet Mountain Dew. You know what? I fucked with some mm-hmm. Diet Mountain Dew. It's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I used to drink it a lot. Mm-hmm. Regular Mountain Dew, and then Diet Mountain Dew, when I switched to Diet Pop, and now all I drink is water and one cup of coffee a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the most boring motherfucker that ever existed when it comes to beverage. Absolute nerd.
You're a fucking penitent. Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I turned into Rod and Todd Flanders about stuff like that. I was just looking at it. I was like, God, and I was thinking about the day that he had mm-hmm. and him eating those salty fries. And I'm like, God, those salty fries and some Denny's garbage food and a Mountain Dew would hit the spot.
Yeah. No, he's not eating fries. He ordered a grand slam, the big breakfast at Denny's. He's shoveling 1500 calories of eggs and pancakes into his face. Right.
Yeah. The fries were from the cut.
Yeah.
He's just doing eggs and pancakes, but pancakes, those aren't good for you. There's mm-hmm. no way to justify a pancake.
No.
But when you have one every once in a while,
shit, man.
God, a pancake is fucking good.
You know what? I would fuck with a grand slam right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I'm not even hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I just a pancake and some Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If I had to have the night this guy had, good Lord, what a comfort. So Walt takes a taxi back home. We see him in his full outfit.
Yeah.
There, and the car is gone. Skyler comes out.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for his car. He kind of looks around. She says, "Yeah, I just didn't want Junior to see the car." And he goes, smart.
You know, and she points out his ridiculous outfit with his pants too big, the crisp red new chucks, and peels off the size large sticker from the shirt, you know, asking, you okay? And he says, yep, right as rain.
You know, and Skyler gives him a nod and asks if he has his keys.
Yeah.
You know, and he just goes back to the car and she's very upset. Because she knows he's not okay.
No.
This isn't normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Pulp Fiction at worst. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he just had to go change into it looks like a couple of dorks.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But then because it's Breaking Bad, we also have to get the little hook for what's going to be kind of the focus at the beginning of this episode. Ends on this crime scene. Y'all, the investigators at Gail's place taking it apart, and the camera finds his lab notes.
Yep.
Little binder. Womp womp.
Yeah. His little binder that's like a middle school. Like it's almost like a trapper keeper.
It's got cool constellations on it or something.
It's got a thunderstorm on it. Like it's a cloud with a big bolt of lightning coming out of it. It's very goofy. And he printed out a little sticker that says lab notes on it. It's great.
I love it. Yeah. It's very sweet. So they have a serious lead. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about Gus's fury during this episode, this has done the most to expose him of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, not only is it, fucked up his plans and everything like that, but this is way worse than the two dealers getting killed. Random gang violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a whole, somebody closely associated with him who's going to be closely investigated.
Yes.
At this point. And some of my favorite scenes going forward in the season are going to be Gus with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him deal with that and continue to keep his shield up, but watch it kind of falter as it goes is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Same thing in season 5 where Mike's in that position.
Yes.
Like these people who are we're so secure and so perfect at this stuff.
Yeah.
To just ultimately end up like having to watch them have these kind of cracks in their armor is really satisfying to me.
Yes.
And great, great acting opportunities
for
both these really, really good actors.
Yeah. So I feel a little bad about how short this episode is, but when so much of it is dialogueless, they ran into that too. Like it was a 42 page script when normally they're like 60 and they're just like, hey, we're just going to have to go on faith that this is going to time out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's we go as long as the episode takes to cover.
Yeah.
You know, we appreciate everybody listening though. And we appreciate, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. We would appreciate that. Mm-hmm. We'd appreciate you leaving ratings and reviews, telling your friends, posting about us online.
Yeah. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, who also composed our theme song.
Yeah. Big thank you. And until next time, again, I know we keep saying this, but maybe don't do any of this stuff.
I would say avoid it if you can. I'm not your dad, but I would say maybe don't.
Yeah, it seems bad. I wouldn't do it. Because you don't, at this point in my life, 43, I feel like the chances I get my throat slit with a box cutter have never been lower. Like every year I'm alive, they get lower, you know? And I want to keep it that way as best as I can.
So the scheme here that you have proposed is that at some point between like the age of 10 and 30,
very likely.
Like it's incredibly likely.
90% likely.
Right.
You age out of it. It's like, it's like my ball cancer scare. Yeah. Like eventually, like you're just not the target market for this, you know, there's still an outside chance though. And I'm not going to get into, last little thing to shore up, short episode. Did you watch that? Did you read that thing where Giancarlo Esposito, the interview where he talked about before he landed Breaking Bad, he was in such dire straits financially that he considered hiring a hitman to kill him.
What?
So his family would get the insurance.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It came out in an interview.
Holy shit.
And he had only done kind of bit parts and he talked about like he had 4 kids. He needed to provide for them. Like all that, like a man provides for his family shit is deeply Gus, is Giancarlo.
Yeah.
In that. And it was like looking for, and then he realized like, no, even though that would provide for them financially, I don't want to give them the trauma.
Right. No. Just
Walter White ass situation though.
Yeah.
To
live with a father who's been murdered by outright, like, oof, It is hard to imagine the desperation that would lead to that.
Yes.
What a lucky break.
Yeah. Absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Anywho. If you're between the ages of 10 and 30, ask your doctor about throat slitting.
Ask your doctor. No, not even going to say it. Nope.